Welcome in once again. It's Jimmy B and TC here with you, 1700 KBGG. Jim Prinsen and myself, Trent Connan, talking the world of sports with you. We're here with you until 6 o'clock tonight. Big day of high school wrestling. We got the semifinals coming up this evening for you. Brinson, how you doing today?
Trent, I just got to, before we even get into the show, how you holding up, partner? How's your throat? You don't sound bad. You still sound like you're excited. And your throat is still in good shape. I can hear it in your voice.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
I'm struggling, Brinson. I'm struggling already, and I got a session tonight. I got a session tomorrow. Yeah. I got a doubleheader of hoops on Monday. I got a substate game on Friday. Jimmy B,
I told you, tea with either lemon or with honey. It'll coat your throat. It'll help you make it through all this, kid.
Whiskey? Can I just drink whiskey?
You sound like Indiana Jones when he says whiskey. That's great. That's great. But you're having a good time. It sounds good with what you're doing. I've listened in.
Well, it is fun. And, you know, in this market, you know, I've told you before growing up where I did, and I always thought it was so cool and hear wrestlers' names. And as a little kid, hearing, you know, the guys that were my babysitters, the Sweeney Boys, they were the ones that were my babysitters. And they make it to state, and you get to hear their name on the radio. And then as I got a little older, I got to go to the games and just how cool that was. But, you know, that was just one town. Here, I'm hitting everybody. So I'm going over, and there's eight mats going on, and I'm going from a kid from Dallas Center Grimes to a kid from PCM to a kid from Valley to Dowling to Waukee to Johnston, just on and on and on. It is a lot of fun. I don't know how well I keep track of things, because there's so much, Jim. They're just there's some matches that happen, and I missed it, and I'm looking. apparently that was over.
You can only do so much. I mean, how many when I went there that one time and I watched, my head was spinning. I felt like I was like on The Exorcist where the little girl's head spins around in circles. I did not spit up pea soup though. I want you to know that. That's the way it has to be. I'm just amazed that you get as many different matches in as you have when I'm listening to you.
It is difficult at times, but it's always fun, and that's the best thing. And well, I'm not going to complain. Calling sports, I'm not taking ditches. It's a lot better than the alternative, no doubt.
All right, let's do this. Take a deep breath because we have college basketball tomorrow, and we have Iowa State in the Big 12 on the road at Kansas State, and in the Big 10 we have Iowa at home against Indiana. Where are you on those games?
Well, let's go through them individually. And
All right.
Iowa State, it's a road game, right?
Yes.
Road game at K-State. We've seen this team on the road. Not very good. They're a different team at home than they are on the road, and K-State came in there when everybody was down in Memphis, and they really put it to Iowa State in that one. I don't have very big expectations for Iowa State in that matchup, all right? 0-1. Let's go to Iowa. Well, it's Iowa. Indiana's not very good themselves, but they're a lot better than this Iowa team. Carver, they played better, but I just have a feeling this team wants this season to be over. This is going to go down as one of the worst teams in Iowa basketball history.
Wow, it's not even worse than some of the Licklider teams?
Well, I mean, in terms of record, absolutely. And here's the difference, Jim.
Okay.
Those teams were unbearable to watch. They were. They were just awful to watch because of the style that they played, and they weren't very talented. And this team, they feel more talented, right? They're more talented than those Licklider teams.
Yes, yeah, there's players on that team, yeah.
But they're more talented offensively. And there are two ends of the court. We're not playing six-on-six basketball that the ladies played back in the day, where you got three on each side, and you're going up, and you get two dribbles, and you don't have to play on the other end of the floor. You just chuck it to the other end. This is five-on-five basketball, and you have to play both ends of the floor. I don't see anybody. Who on this team is good defensively? Name one guy.
Ryan Kreener, about the only guy I can name.
Ryan Kreener? The guy plays eight minutes a game.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When he's on the court, he plays defense. That's about the only guy. If you want me to pick a starter, none of them. None of them.
So are we sure this team is that talented? They're offensively talented. I will give you that.
Yes.
But is this team that talented? Tyler Cook's not a good defender. Jordan Bahiana's not a good defender. Garza, I really don't know. Isaiah Moss, absolutely not. That guy's lost at times. Nunji, Pemsel, on and on and on. These guys, they're not good defensively. So they're offensively. I think we need to put that caveat out there. They are talented offensively. But on the defensive end, well, we know that's not the case. So, and that's the, you know, listen to Crispin the other night talk about this squad. That's why we thought this team was going to be good. And so many times we just overlook what happens on the other end of the floor. So I brought something up here. And it's one of the very simplified systems out there in terms of measuring how good a team is and individual players are defensively. Just defensive rating. All it is, an estimate of points allowed per 100 possessions. So 100 is about average. The best defender on this team is a 105, which is not good, in Nicholas Bear. Garza's behind him. Third on the list is Riley Till. Well, he's a walk-on. I mean, he only plays at the end of games. Kreener is next, though, on the list. Nunji.
Yeah.
But at the bottom, and this is a pretty damning statement, your last four players on the list are all your guards. Isaiah Moss, 112.9. Maishi Daly, 113.6. Brady Ellingson, 114.2. And Jordan Bohannon, 115.4. Each of these guys gives up more than 12 points per 100 possessions than an average player. And for Bohannon, it's 15 points per 100 possessions. That's a lot, Jimmy B. That shows you there needs to be a lot of work done. They have to find a way to reconstruct this roster.
You know, I'm just stunned that when they go to a zone, that they can't be even somewhat successful with a zone. It absolutely amazes me. I mean, you have your area that you're supposed to defend, and they can't even defend that aspect of it. So I don't know what to say. I agree with you that they're going to have to make changes. I believe also that you're going to see not one, but a couple of players leave. And I think you're going to see a coach leave, maybe two coaches too. They're going to have to shake it up. And I just can't believe that they haven't been able to find anything that helps them. Look, have they looked good at times? Yeah, offensively, they've looked real good at times. But defensively, you're correct, they are lost in space. And I don't know, Trent. I just think that they're going to have to do some overhauling, and it's not just players. I think they're going to have to do something else, not just players.
No, I'm with you, Jim, and I've been on this for a few weeks now, and seems like it's maybe gaining more traction. More people are starting to talk about it, and it's starting to go down that road. And it's not an indictment, I don't think, of Kirk Sparrow or to Sherm Dillard or to Andrew Francis. It's just 8 years together. That's what I keep coming back to. And even if they were having not this disastrous of a season, but it was a year that was just a tad disappointing, and maybe they fall just short. Kind of like last year, you know, a game short of the NCAA tournament, something like that. I think I'd still be asking the same question. This isn't an overreaction to really the first huge disappointing year of Fran McCaffrey, but it's a thought, you know, that has been, why is this staff, why is this group still together? You brought it. Kirk Sparrow made sense. An Iowa guy, played on the Final Four team for Lute, ran a college program at Central Florida as they were going through a transition from, I don't even remember the conference they started in, but they were in the Atlantic Sun and then Conference USA. You know, he was a part of that, and he took them to NCAA tournaments. I get it. Sherm Dillard was a little more of a stretch. Guy hadn't coached for a long time. Andrew Francis, young guy that comes with you, but Andrew Francis isn't a young guy anymore. He's still in his 40s. I don't want to, you know, make him out to be, but this is an aging staff along with an aging coach. I know that's not supposed to matter. Age discrimination and all those things, but Jimmy B, it kind of matters.
Yeah, I think it matters. They got to do something, Trent. I mean, look, weren't they in the NIT last year and then got beat on their home court by TCU?
Yeah.
On their home court in the NIT in the second round. Yeah. And now they suck.
That's the problem. The loss to TCU, that doesn't matter. That's not worth a hill of beans. It's a loss in the NIT. And we're not going to be sitting around bouncing our grandkids on our knee talking about that great NIT run out of Iowa. That's not going to happen. The problem is this year. That's the problem here. That's the problem more than anything. Last year, you know what? Being as close as they were a game away from the NCAA tournament, that was an accomplishment. That was a team that had lost basically everybody short of Peter Jok. And to get that squad that close, that was a good coaching job. This is not a good coaching job. Understatement of the day.
What happened? What happened? How could it go from the guys who played last year and played well to stinking up the joint this season? It's got to be some sort of chemistry. I don't know if they don't get along. We don't hear anything like that.
Right.
It's like they get off the bus and go through the motions. I don't know. I get a free ride because I'm a basketball player. I can go to school for nothing. I don't know. I keep shaking my head, Trent. This one, normally you can figure it out. Mm-hmm. Normally you got an issue with a couple of players. You have a coaching staff that just can't get out of their own way. You have a lack of talent. You're severely undersized. You're playing a 6'4" center. You know, there are things that you can pick out. But this has really been a head scratcher. You have size. You have some quickness. You have talent on that team.
Offensive talent.
And they stink. It's unfathomable to me. Just unfathomable.
So I didn't get a chance to do it. Maybe next week I will. But one thing I want to look at, you know, we've talked about their defensive ineptitude and just how bad it's been. But, you know, I wanted to take a look back at historically where they rank in terms of power conference teams. They're 242nd in adjusted defense in the country. By far the worst out of any major conference team. And I think it was Vanderbilt at last check when I looked a week or so ago that was next on that list. And Vandy was something like 170th or something like that. And a big drop down until you get to Iowa. But I want to take a step further and look historically and look over, say, the last 5 years, if this is the worst power conference team in adjusted defense in the country. Wow. Because it very well could be. You think of some of those bad teams, but all right, I'll just go back to last year. I'm going to try to find the worst team from a major conference. So here you go. Washington with your boy Markelle Fultz. They were really bad defensively. A lot of people talked about that. And they also talked about Fultz, and I don't know about him. 224th. Still better than Iowa. 224th last year.
Wow.
Let's see if I can find another one from last year out of the power structure. Rutgers was 70th in defense. I don't know if we're going to find.
What was Iowa again? Rutgers was 70th? What was Iowa?
242.
Oh, my God. And Rutgers was 70.
Yes, yes.
Oh, God.
They can play a little D. Play a little D.
Wow.
Oh, Jim, it is, it's going to be a long one. It is going to be a long one. All right, from there to the MVC, you and I, the Panthers play at 5 o'clock right after that. We'll have state wrestling for you in the state finals after they wrap up. But the MVC team, we're talking about the Drake Bulldogs. They are off, though, till Sunday when they go down to Springfield to take on Mo State. Does the magic continue out of the Doggies?
Mo State's reasonably decent, right?
All right, yeah. I mean, they were the preseason favorite, and that has not turned out to be the case. And you got to feel that Paul Lusk, maybe he's in some trouble down there. But they're talented, certainly. Yes.
Okay, they do have players. I think the key, I mean, for every game, it's how well Reed Timbers scores. Do I think he has to go for 35 again or 40? I don't know if he has to do that, but I think he consistently has to be up to 25 at least for Drake to have a chance in the game. So for me, if Reed Timmer is held below 25, Drake doesn't win this game.
All right, how about this? Let's run through the final three games of the MVC. Let's have a little fun here, Jimmy B. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
We'll see what the brackets say. All right, you and I at Illinois State. Who you got?
I'll take Illinois State. I don't think you and I. I think Kevin Lehman, he said it on our show several times. They can't score.
Mm-hmm.
Trent, they scored in the 40s the other night and found a way to win.
47-41, a beauty.
Oh, God. I'm glad I missed that one. I'll take Illinois State.
Okay, we got a lot of games here. Pick up the pace. Indiana.
Okay. All right, I'll pick it up.
All right, Southern Illinois at Indiana State.
Southern Illinois at Indiana State. I'll take Indiana State. Didn't they beat Indiana earlier? They did. I'll take Indiana State.
Bradley at Valpo.
Is some guy named Larry playing for Indiana State?
Oh, jeez. We're never going to get through this. Hurry up.
Probably. All right. Bradley at Valpo. I'll take Valpo at home.
Thank you. Evansville hosting Loyola.
I like Loyola. They're the best team in the league.
And Moe State Drake.
I'm going to take Moe State.
All right. We go to the next group of games. You and I at Valparaiso.
At Valpo, I'm going to take Valpo.
Drake at Illinois State.
Illinois State.
Evansville at Indiana State.
Purple Aces have surprised people, but I think that guy named Larry shows up and Indiana State wins.
Bradley at Missouri State, you goober.
I'll take Missouri State.
And Loyola at Southern.
I'm taking Loyola.
All right, last group of games. Bradley hosting Indiana State.
Bradley.
Drake hosting Valpo.
I'll take Drake at home. I like the way they play at home.
Southern Illinois at Evansville.
Evansville. I love the Purple Aces.
Loyola hosting Illinois State.
I'm taking Loyola.
And you and I hosting Missouri State.
Man. How much time do we have? Do I have time to think about this one or not?
Think about it.
Probably not. Okay, I'll take you and I just because they're home.
They're at home. All right, you give the Panthers at least one victory. So we hit the old generator, and this is what it spits out. This will be your MVC tournament, March 1st through the 4th at Scott Trade Center. Loyola, no surprise, the top seed. Your number two seed, the Drake Bulldogs. Drake comes out with the two seed. They're tied with Illinois State and Southern Illinois. Illinois State, Southern, the 3 and 4 seeds. The U and I Panthers are the number 9 seed. They will open up with Evansville in the 8-9 game. Welcome in, Panthers, to the Drake Invitational.
And for once, Drake is not in it. Amazing the way that you have calculated that. That cracks me up.
So you and I, with a win, they would take on top-seeded Loyola. Of course, that quick turnaround. You play 6 o'clock on Thursday and then the noon game the following day on Friday against the top seed. Drake would await the winner of Indiana State. Valpo, you got Illinois State and Missouri State on the bottom side of that bracket with the Bulldogs. A path to the title game, Jimmy B, for Drake. Let's hope.
That would at least give us something to talk about, because we're not going to get that out of Iowa or Iowa State.
No, not at all. All right, Jimmy B, we need a break here. We got a lot still to come on the program today. Again, high school wrestling also back on the airwaves after a long day. We got a couple more hours coming up. 7:30 tonight with the Class 3A semifinal round. We're back with more here on 1700 KBGG.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue on the Big Talker 1700. Zubin Mahente from ESPN joins us now. Zubin, I'm going to start this, unfortunately, on a sad note, because watching your network and their coverage of what transpired yesterday in Florida, and rightfully so, and some of the players, including the Cubs' Anthony Rizzo, who went to that school, this has just been a horrific day that took place in Florida, And you just can't escape things like that, even in the sports world.
You can't, and nor should you. I mean, it's the biggest story of the day. It's the biggest story of the week. And a lot of it just comes down to the simple notion that you don't have to have kids. You can just have neighbors that are kids. You once were a kid. And I'm 39. I know Trent's about my age. I think, Jim, obviously you're a little bit older. Like, every single day I went to school, and granted, I haven't even been in college now in about 18 years, but I'm just going to call it like your secondary education, like your elementary, middle, and high school. There was never a day I went to school, never. And this is a much simpler era, and obviously the world is, you know, moving so fast now. I never feared, ever, walking into school from K through 12. In fact, I think if you were to ask my parents, they would tell you school is probably the safest place for me to possibly be. That's probably the safest place I could be throughout the course of the day. And obviously now we know it's not the case. I'm not on Twitter, but last night I was just looking around for people's reactions to this story. And the best post I saw was one by John Walters, my old boss at Channel 5. And he just posted a photograph of, I don't know if you should call it an assault rifle. I think it's called an M15. I don't know guns very well. And I'm going to paraphrase the quote. I wish I had it in front of me. I'm actually outside of my apartment, or I was just fired up. It said something like, no politics, just civility. Why do we need to sell these? And it had a picture of what had to be the longest-looking gun I've ever seen. And it was just one of those moments where, you're right, Jim, it transcended everything. We covered it last night. You mentioned Anthony Rizzo happened to go to that high school in Florida. But that's how I kind of felt. I just looked back at myself when I was a kid, and I said to myself, school used to be a sanctuary, like a safe place to be. And now I think it's pretty clear that schools aren't safe. And, I mean, I'm just walking around my neighborhood of West Hartford, Connecticut, talking to you on my cell phone, and I'm not safe here. And this is one of the safest places in Connecticut. So it really makes you kind of take stock and just step back for a second. There was a lot of sports being contested last night, but it does definitely give you pause. And I know both of you guys, I'm not a parent. I know both of you guys are parents. So it probably hits home a little harder for you guys. And Trent, I know you have a kid that, you know, in a few years will be going to school mm-hmm. every day themselves. So I can't understand it on the level you guys have, because I'm not a parent. But you just, your heart just breaks, and you just wonder, like, when is this ever going to end? Like, when is this ever going to end? Is this ever going to spur change? I saw Steve Kerr, you know, Jim, I know we talk about him on the podcast for a variety of reasons, and your radio show for a variety of reasons, mostly due to basketball and the Warriors. But it's been well documented that his father was assassinated by gun violence in the 1980s in the Middle East, and he's been one of the biggest proponents of gun laws. And again, yesterday, after this happened, he came out and gave a speech on behalf of that. And you just wonder, from his standpoint, when will he have to stop doing that? When can he be satisfied with what we've got going on? So it's just a terrible, terrible issue that creeps up just far too often.
It does. And we, Zubin, try to transition away from that, and it's never easy to make a transition away. But I did want to get your thoughts on the NBA. Yes, Zubin, I'm going to go there with you. And Jimmy B, I give him a minute to do it every
Yay!
Day. Yes, I'm going to give you a little bit longer than that. But I want to go to the Lakers. Admittedly, the Lonzo Ball story and what's happening with him as a player and Pops and LeVar and all these things, it can be oversaturated at times, but it is compelling. You know, we talk a lot with you. I like to go kind of a little deeper inside of ESPN. That fine line, and I saw Ramona Shelburne had a piece up that I was reading through. I haven't made it all the way through, just about the Ball family and some other things there, and the Lakers that goes along with it. But that story as a whole, is it something that you ever get sick of talking about?
Well, I mean, from us, it's a bottom line perspective, which is, if people are interested in it, in other words, if fans or sports fans are interested in it, then we're going to be interested in it. Because much like you guys, you know, we're in the interest of clicks and views and listens, whether it's ESPN, the magazine, ESPN.com with Ramona's work, or on television or on the radio. So from a true bottom line perspective, if people are talking about it, and people certainly are talking about it, whether he was in stateside, whether it was about his sons, whether it was about being in Lithuania, whatever it is, if people are interested in it, we're definitely going to be talking about it. Because despite all the criticism you may get, even internally, there have been several people at ESPN that have come out and said, enough's enough. But the bottom line is, if our viewers or our consumers, I'll just, you know, lump it into consumers because there's various ways you can consume some of these products. If our consumers are interested in it, we almost have a right to broadcast it, show it, and discuss it. Now, part of that could just be saying, listen, I understand we're showing it because people are interested in it, but here's why I'm not interested in it. And then anybody that has an alternate view can throw it in. So my general feeling is that as long as our viewers continue to click on it, and as long as he becomes a story, then it's worth discussing. Now, obviously, the critics would tell you that if it wasn't for ESPN and other outlets continuing to promote his goods, his services, his big baller brand, there wouldn't be anything there. But at the end of the day, that's no different than us promoting the English Premier League to make soccer a bigger deal because the demographics of the country are changing. Or it's making boxing a big deal because we just signed a deal with top-ranked boxing, and obviously boxing used to be one of the country's great sports and obviously has slipped. So at the end of the day, if the viewers and consumers want it, we'll talk about it. The thing that I find really interesting from the Lakers' perspective, Trent, is that All-Star Weekend is upon us. It's in Los Angeles. This is a great opportunity for the Lakers to sort of start their pitches. I know, obviously, you can't tamper, but, you know, hey, look at this. This is L.A. This is what it's like 365 days a year, this kind of weather, this kind of excitement. We've been one of the worst teams in the NBA for years. This place is still packed. They love the Lakers. Come and experience this. And instead of having that be the main focal point, Magic Johnson's got to deal with the whole fallout of, if you don't sign my sons, and Lonzo's not going to stay. But I will say, I think Magic is partly responsible for this, because let's say they wanted to trade him, and I don't think they're itching to trade him. He's still injured, and I don't think they're that upset with LeVar to the point where they'd want to move him. But let's just say it got to be a situation that was untenable from the Lakers' perspective. I simply remember Magic standing up there and saying, one day I want my jersey. He told us Alonzo Ball, I'm sure you remembered his opening press conference, I want your jersey to be hanging there up alongside mine. And that's incredibly high praise. I don't know what kind of trade value they could get back, even if it were to be consummated down the road. I don't think it's a serious possibility at this point. But when you put that sort of praise on a young person and the person gets injured and every vet in the league is seemingly trying to show him up because of his dad, it's a really tough spot to be. If they did trade him, I don't think they could get equal value back, even though I think he's a talented player. But I think Magic may have just overhyped him. Not that it's not justified, but may have put a little bit too much on him a little bit too early. But that's kind of a general feel. If people are into it, like you guys, I mean, you guys might one day, I doubt it, you guys one day might have Iowa and Iowa State fatigue, but you know your audience doesn't. You know what I mean? And if the audience doesn't have it, and they want to talk about Iowa State is the last place team in the Big 12, and the fervor is still there, and you're like, you know, why don't we give a little attention to Drake for having a better-than-expected season? You know what your compass says. Your compass says people want to talk about Iowa State being in last place and knocking off West Virginia and Texas Tech and almost beating Kansas at home. You may be talked out of that, but your listeners aren't. And it's kind of the same thing with us. We may be talked out of LeVar, but our audience wants more. So you got to give them more.
Zubin Mehente is our guest right here on the Big Talker 1700. Zubin, I'll ask you one more then NBA question, and then I've got a couple other topics as well. And that is, are you stunned, being a follower of the NBA, that the Cleveland Cavaliers, even though they have the best player on the planet in LeBron James, have been able to take these four new guys, and they have not lost a game yet, and they have won on the road. Where are you now on the Cleveland Cavaliers, particularly now since you are close to Boston, and I know how people there at the network follow the Celtics, and they've fallen on hard times. Where are you right now on Cleveland?
Yeah, you know, I think to your point, Jim, it intertwines with Boston in a significant fashion, because if you look at Boston's numbers, I was looking at them the other day. They really still really, since the start of the new year, and I'm sure Brad will figure this out, head coach Brad Stevens, their offense is really poor. I mean, really, really poor. Their defense is playing well. I'm not on the fence about LeBron, because anytime you have LeBron, I think you get the benefit of the doubt. You know, obviously he's been in every NBA final since 2011, so why would this year be any different. But I'm in a little bit of a wait-and-see mode, not because I don't give LeBron the benefit of the doubt. If anything, that would be the reason for me to still consider the Cavs the favorite in the East, despite whatever Toronto or Boston's doing and however hot anybody else might be. But the reason I say that is because on the surface, you appear that they would get better. And the Cavs knew how serious this was. The general manager, Kobe Altman, who got the job when he was 34, he called it a slow death march. He said, we are undergoing a slow death march, and we have got to maximize LeBron right now. Now, he didn't finish the rest of his proverbial sentence, which would have been until he possibly decides to leave. So he knew we need to do something to change the culture of the organization because, in his words, they were on a death march. They needed to do something. And, Jim, I think on the surface, I think if you told me any team, not just a team with LeBron, but if any team got younger, because the Cavs are the oldest team in the league, and they became a better shooting team, which they clearly are at this particular point, then I would tell you that that team would automatically improve. If you get younger in a young person's league and you become a better shooter in a league that's always looking for more shooting, you'll be a better team. The reason I'm giving a slight bit of pause is the Oklahoma City example. At the beginning of the season, I looked at them and said, this is going to be great, right? And then they started the season real slow, and people were like, what's going on? And then they sort of figured it out. Carmelo took a back seat, and they turned it on. Then they struggled again. Then they turned it on again. Then they struggled again. So I think when you're trying to integrate new parts, it's going to take a while. It's taken Oklahoma City the better part of half a season, if not more. And so I think we have to give the Cavs a little bit of time. The major difference, of course, the Cavs are playing in the East, and I'm sure they're not afraid of playing anybody on the road in the Game 7. If it came to it, you don't have to see Houston or Golden State till the final. So I think they got younger, and I think they became a better shooting team. And regardless of who else is on the roster, even if you have the best player in the world, I think if you have those two things going for you, you're going to be immediately better.
Zubin Mahente, ESPN, joining us here. It's Jimmy B and TC. All right, Zubin, over to the Olympics. Pyeongchang 2018, Winter Games. ESPN doesn't have the rights, and as you're preparing maybe to do a late sports center, does that change your viewing habits? How have you been consuming the Winter Olympics, and since you guys don't have the rights, how does that kind of impact what you do on a day-to-day basis as it pertains to sports center?
Yeah, I mean, I think at a core level, we are staffed. We have people over there, as you might imagine. It's the biggest sporting event in the world right now. I think there's a debate whether when the World Cup comes around, how much of the country or countries around the world are enraptured with it. I think at one point there was no question it was the Olympics. It's waned in popularity a little bit, but I don't think there's any cause for concern. But I used to think it was the undisputed number one, but now the fervor with the World Cup, around the world especially, I think you can make an argument that it's running neck and neck. But bottom line, it's either 1 or 1A in my mind in terms of interest around the world. The Super Bowl is just a one-day thing. I mean, the World Cup's a month. The Olympics can be 2.5 to 3 weeks endeavor. For us, it really just comes down to, you know, they are being staged right next door to the most dangerous place in the world. So there's that aspect of it, and the world is watching. So we have to do a lot of things in conjunction with ABC News, which is also under our Disney ESPN umbrella. So if something were to happen from that standpoint, we certainly want to be there and discuss the sports ramifications of that, because in a lot of these countries, the most prominent people that the general public knows are athletes. And so that's something to keep in mind. The other thing I would just say is whenever a story grabs us, we do it. Because I think this one, you never want to overthink. Like, if you're really interested in the Olympics, and a lot of people are, as the ratings seem to indicate, there was very little buzz, I'm sure you guys, I don't know if you agree, there's very little buzz running up to the games for whatever reason. But the games have certainly exceeded expectations, and the ratings have been really good. But our general feeling is, you know, if the game is on, if the NCAA tournament's on CBS and Turner, people are watching CBS and Turner, and they may come to us for the post game. Same thing for the Olympics. If Girard wins that gold medal, if White wins that gold medal, people are watching it on NBC. Our job is to basically give more context to what does it mean, what is it going to be remembered for, what's the legacy of this moment. But we can only do that, of course, after everything is done. The one advantage is that NBC has so many events to televise that they have to kind of go from event to event. And outside of Mike Tirico sitting down with somebody, it's really hard for them to put everything into context, not because they can't, they're brilliantly talented. It's just that they just have so many things on their plate. Okay, this event's over. Now we have to go to Dan Hicks and, you know, Bodie Miller to do this. And now we have to go here and there, where we can select a few things that really capture people. A 17-year-old wins a gold medal. He's barely familiar with the Olympics. Let's talk about him. Shaun White wins the United States 100th gold medal. Let's talk about it. So we can choose to be much more selective, but at the end of the day, I think we know if people really, really want the Olympics, they can go to NBC to get it, and we can give the context where necessary. Because even as the Olympics are going on, the NBA is going on, the NHL is going on, pitchers and catchers are reporting, and for a significant portion of our audience, which is largely male, they're more interested in the NBA. They're more interested in pitchers and catchers reporting. We're going to be interviewing Alex Cora later today for SportsCenter. The Red Sox and the Yankees have new managers. To much of our audience, to many people in our audience, that's more intriguing than what's going on in South Korea. And for some people, you know, obviously South Korea is great. They love the Olympics. So there's a lot of our viewers that are into the Olympics, but there's a lot of our viewers that are really into the other stuff, and we've got to balance both.
Zub Mahente is our guest, ESPN, right here on the Big Talker 1700. Zubin, quickly take me then to some college basketball. And the first time in a long time, there is a very real, and I emphasize real, possibility that the state of Iowa is not going to have any team in the big dance. And this is like crushing for basketball fans in this state. Both Iowa State, Iowa, UNI, and Drake fans. Maybe the best chance is Drake and UNI if one of them, or even both, find a way to get to the Valley Conference Finals, and then you would have somebody in no matter what. In your thought process, did you see this coming, or were you in the boat as well, still following the state of Iowa basketball, that you thought for sure that they would have somebody in, most likely Iowa, and they've been a horrible dud so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, just looking from the outside, looking in, not covering it as, you know, as intensely as you guys do or your listeners do that are with these guys every day, and you guys are on top of the recruiting and all that. I looked at two things at the beginning of the season, and I said, I feel confident about these two things. One, I think everybody agreed, and even Cyclone fans that are listening to your show, everybody agreed Iowa State was ready to take a step back. Now, that doesn't mean they weren't talented enough to hang with some of the teams we mentioned earlier in the interview, but I think a lot of people felt like, okay, this is going to be a little bit of a transition year, and I think that's proven to be the case. And the second thing is, you know, I'd worked in Iowa from 01 to 05, and in that time, I was not there for the Emenecker, that the aberration with Drake. My other, you know, theory was, okay, so you've got a new guy in Drake, basically, and they've never really done anything. Andy Sales used to tell me that, I'm sure it's like a little inside joke, but like, you know, the first day of the Valley Tournament, whenever Drake would play in that first game, that play-in game, they had dubbed that game the Drake Invitational, you know, because Drake was always a part of that game, you know? Drake getting a bye seemed like almost not possible. So those are the two things I thought. Iowa State would take a step back, and Drake, unfortunately, would continue to play the way they have. I think I was half right and half wrong. But the one thing, I don't know, Trent, if you agree, you've been in Iowa much longer than both of us. The one thing I always thought could be the saving grace was you and I just running the table under Coach Jacobson. Mm-hmm. But, man, they look so bad this year. I mean, I've been really surprised. I know they probably don't get as much attention on the show as the other three teams, especially with Drake being in closer proximity. But you always kind of felt like you and I could turn it on when they needed to, especially with Wichita State out of the Valley. They could, you know, if they had a middling regular season, they could turn it on. But I see that maybe as one of the most remote possibilities. Iowa hasn't won a Big Ten tourney game in years. I'm pretty sure that's a pretty strong plural there, Trent. They haven't won a Big Ten tournament game in years, but the UNI one was the one that always caught me because I'm like, you know what? There's average talent in the league relative to where UNI is. They have a great coach, and they've shown the ability to turn it on when needed, but I don't know what the deal is. Maybe flipping a switch is a lot harder than I thought it was, but UNI has probably been the biggest surprise to me because I think we saw Iowa State coming, but UNI just looks like a shell of what I thought it could be, and they show no inclination to be able to turn it on at the Valley Tournament. So I'm with you, Jim. I think, you know, Iowa's a big disappointment, But I think you and I is the one team you can kind of count on because of their circumstances. And now they seem about less as reliable as anybody.
Not only is Big Ten, Iowa not won in the Big Ten tournament, they've lost four consecutive years to double-digit seeds. That's not good in a 14-team league and a 12-team league before that. Zubin, we are out of time. Thanks, as always, for joining us here today. Really appreciate it and enjoy the conversation.
All right, we'll see you next week.
That's Zubin Mehete, ESPN, Jimmy B. As, well, we get ready to... Oh, Jim, I'm tired. I'm getting worn down.
I know
already.
You are, pal.
I'm getting worn down.
You like I've called in the masseuse, man, to come in and give you the back rub, and so you'll feel a lot better. And just like what I told you the other day, honey or lemon, either one in your tea. That'll keep your throat quiet, and you'll still be able to function at a strong level. Take it from a man who knows.
In my tea, you speak like I drink tea. Do I look like a tea drinker to you?
No, you do not. No, you're more of a beer guy.
Yes.
But that doesn't help your throat.
It doesn't.
So I'm I'm sorry. For your throat, yes.
This is getting even worse.
Yes, get some tea. That'll work for you, trust
me.
Hot tea. Yeah.
We'll take the time out. We're back with more Jimmy B and TC. All right, back one final time here for this hour. We will bring you back for the 5 o'clock hour. Just a few minutes left here in Brinson. I don't know what Brinson's even up to. He stepped out and he's probably sitting on the dumper. But regardless, so we've talked a lot about the ineptitude of Iowa and roster construction and those kind of things and recruiting misses and, you know, the junior and senior class of what they were. So I was just remembering a couple of the guys that had left and two in particular. Andrew Fleming, who played at Oak Hill. So, the guy's a shooter. He played at Oak Hill. Didn't work out. Freshman season, played 12 games, shot 25% from 3 of 12, not exactly what you want out of your shooter, 5 of 10 from the foul line, didn't do a whole lot. He transfers last year, sits out a year, now with sophomore eligibility, a redshirt sophomore, goes down to the mid-major level, goes closer to his home, he's a Tennessee kid originally. So he's at Lipscomb? Yeah, he's there with the Lipscomb butt darts. Here's what Andrew Fleming is doing this season. He is averaging 3.5 points a game. But maybe more importantly, he's shooting 31% from the field. That's right, 31%. A good average in baseball, not so much shooting the basketball. It gets worse. The shooter is shooting 17% from 3. 17. He is 6 of 35 from 3 this year. Whoa. That's at the mid-major level. That's not good. That's a recruiting swing and a miss. Another guy, Brandon Hutton. Defensive guy that was going to be able... He was the guy that was going to get to the rim. Remember that? He's playing right now with Northwestern State. And I understand Northwestern State, the Demons, can be a sore subject for Hawkeye fans. He's there, I don't think, to rub it in on the Hawks at all. He's playing in the Southland. Not a very good conference. He's averaging 4.4 points per game. He's shooting 37% from the floor. 27% from 3. Defensively? Pretty good, actually. Okay. Never could sniff it. Never got it done. Two more recruiting misses out of the Hawkeyes. What are they doing now? Now you know. 5 o'clock hours next here on Jimmy B and TC. We kick it off with Kevin Lehman. Hopefully Brinson gets out of the bathroom.